horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back. Joe Applebaum's going to join us momentarily, and as we wait for Joe, let me slip in some of the things we led into yesterday in terms of racing, and that included Del Mar, and there's been another one of these multi-race hits, clearly by CAW money, a $36,000 ticket to take down the $686,000 pick six. And the interesting thing about this one, this actually could have been hit by a regular player. It's a little bit weird because there were two favorites, a second choice and a third choice and a fourth choice, and then there was one hard horse in the fifth race, that Dancing Dana from Craig Lewis. That was a tough one. And Alexis Centeno, the 7-pound bug, with a couple of wins in the sequence, actually, because he also was on Bounty of Gold in the seventh. But you look at the numbers here: 16-20, 37-20, 580, 1060, 440, and 13-20. This really was not a sequence that was outlandish in terms of, you know, needing countless combinations covered. But that's the challenge. The CAW money, and you know, the way in which, you know, they've got the, you know, the graded curve of tickets that they're putting in, and so 36,000 nets 686,000. So 2 days in a row, and I haven't seen details of the pick five hit from Sunday night. That one I'm also curious about. That one was much more of a series of crazy prices to yield the kind of return that came. So that was yesterday, and there was also, since we had Brad and we talked about some of the sequence in that feature, the eighth race feature. I was on Tripoli, who I thought ran okay. Ended up third, though. Couldn't get to Scarto, the 6-5 favorite under Rispoli, who continues just to win races in bunches. And that was Mike Pipey. And Little Red Feather, and as Brad said, I mean, Little Red Feather winning races hand over fist. But Scarto and A Journey to Freedom came rallying from off the pace. And Tripoli was sort of mid-pack and kind of a mile. I thought there were a few strides where I thought maybe I was going to get something. But and the price was right, 11 to 1. And we should also mention Casey's trying to raise Joe Applebaum. The result at Presque Isle, too. You had the stake yesterday at Presque and in the Satin and Lace. In the midst of Biz, beat Caramel Martini, Willie Martinez, who you know we love. Willie, wire to wire, with Tony Black not riding. Willie Martinez is the closest thing out there to Willie, a notoriously strong front end rider, and actually that was a nice price in the midst of Biz. You got 820, Cipriano Contreras with a FedBiz filly, and a filly that he owns with Andrew Napchik. And my Caramel Martini, we thought we were going to get, you know, a decent price, but took all the money and ended up going off as just under 2-1, 2-1 favorite. And ran okay, but you could see wasn't winning. So way too many seconds and thirds, frankly. of late. Been too many of those this summer. Joe Applebaum joins us from the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, and with Joe, a serious player and one of only two industry leaders that cited horse players in their reactions to yesterday's press conference and potential for a governing authority to bring certain elements of the game into standardization. Joe, good morning.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm okay. Sorry we ended up a little bit behind today, the breaking news, as it were, and the Derby losing. Art Collector from the field this morning with a quarter grab, and I don't know. Something tells me your Derby leaning is very New York centric.
It always is, but you know, I hate to say it and sound trite, but it's a tough, tough game, and especially when you're getting ready for a race like the Derby, which is on a particular day at a particular distance, everything has to go just perfectly. And, you know, I hate to see it for the game. I'd love to see 20 great horses line up there. So to have one of the top contenders have to bow out is—I don't think it's good for any of us. You know, even though I'm a New York homer, it's just not good. You know, but those guys know what they're doing. It sounds like they're doing the right thing by the horse, and I'm sure we'll be back before we know it.
Well, we heard a lot of that that quote, that phraseology, what's right for the horse. Talk a little bit, Joe. You were quoted, and as I lauded already earlier this morning, you and Eric Hamelbeck deserve praise and appreciation for including horse players in your reactions to yesterday's announcement. Nobody else seemed to notice that that's actually the business of horse racing. I guess we're used to that. But some thoughts about what this means. And we just had Alan Foreman, and of course your colleague with the THA, some thoughts about how NYFA and how stakeholders should view this.
Well, first off, I want to get back to the horse players for a second, because I view them very similarly to our ownership groups, right? Like, there's not a major owner that I know that's not also a major horse player. And so it's one and the same. And let's be honest, we've not really done a great job as an industry taking care of our clients, be it horse owners or horse players. So nothing about their being forgotten about would surprise me. Having said that, you know, this has been this idea of federalization or centralization of medication control has been a big issue over obviously the last, let's say, 10 years. And I think, you know, I'm hopeful that what we're seeing from the majority leader is going to be beneficial to everyone. And we won't know until we see the actual text, but, you know, the summary seems to be going in the right direction. And it's just, from my perspective, a massive, massive improvement over what's been suggested previously on a whole bunch of levels, mostly structural, so that doesn't, you know, get the big headlines. But those are the things 20 years from now, when you're hoping this authority is doing what it's supposed to do, or what's really important.
You seemed very encouraged by this direction, and what are the elements that you feel will immediately improve the entire landscape, Joe, and what parts of it do we need to more or less knuckle down and hammer out elements that before certain parts of the game and certain interests for owners and horsemen and players get steamrolled. And frankly, it feels to me like some of that steamrolling was already sidetracked, actually. And that part alone is encouraging.
Yeah, so let's talk about the encouraging parts, right? One, the bill expanded its focus from medication only to essentially horse welfare, okay, by including a track safety and track operations line to it. I think that's really critical because what we've learned is it's not just one thing. It's a whole host of things that contribute to horses breaking down, right, or people gaining an advantage. And if you don't look at these things systematically and across the board, you're not going to get the results that you want. So that's really important. Two, I think, at least the way I feel that it's going, that it strikes the proper balance of independence, right? So people, we hope learned people from outside the industry who can weigh in, plus people who have industry-specific experience, people like Scott Palmer or Mary Scalay, you know, like you don't want to leave people like that out of the mix. And I think that I think that element has been brought into it here. I think third, which was really important to me, it's one of the issues that I really pounded on, is put USADA in a role that they can perform well. And this puts them into a role that aligns with their core strengths, not an oversight role that was originally intended for them, that they really have no experience in, and quite honestly, they had no real desire to play when you actually started talking to them. So I think those three things are very helpful, right? It's going to hold everyone accountable, not just the trainers. It'll hold the tracks accountable, hold veterinarians accountable, hold state racing commissions accountable. And really, Steve, the only successes we've had, and I look to New York, where we've considerably lowered our breakdown rate, and by considerably, I mean like over 60% over the last half decade, the only way we're able to do that is by everyone contributing, by everyone upping their game, by horsemen upping their game, by NIRA upping their game, by the Gaming Commission upping their game, veterinarians as well. So that's the model I take to a national effort. I think on the things we need to be careful on is, one, we shouldn't fool ourselves. This is going to take a while to get going, right? The bill still has to be introduced, and it has to pass in a little bit of a, you know, I don't know if King Solomon would have appreciated this, but a way to get around charges of board stacking, we're going to create a blue ribbon panel to appoint the board to hire a staff.
Yeah.
Those things take time. That's a little bit of a convoluted process, but to make everyone comfortable with who those board members might be, that's what was necessary. That's fine. But so first off, we shouldn't expect immediate change, number one. Number two, the hard work for me is just beginning, right? The hard work is implementation and execution. And so this was the easy part, and it only took us, I don't know, how many years, 10 years? So the hard part is the implementation, right? And I just hope everyone works as hard and as focused on that as possible over the next few years, because that's really critical. Right, like you can have the best plan, but if you don't implement it properly, you're going to have more trouble. And then finally, I think everyone feels the same way. Is like, is it going to be the same old, same old? Like, we need to get really talented individuals, both on central staff and on the board, who aren't really the same old people, who are tied to the same old people, who have, quite frankly, led us down this path for the last 25 years, 30 years. You know, It's time for some new blood, both from within the industry and outside the industry.
There's a couple of things about this, though, that don't seem like there would be any appreciable difference, and I'm going to reference something from yesterday and some seemingly casual reporting. I think I've got it here somewhere. Robertino Diodoro had three positives medication overages essentially at at Oaklawn, and there's the reporting of it, and you know the specifics that came out, and nobody that reported spent 1 second explaining the two medications involved, which are both on the RCI list of controlled therapeutic meds. And so essentially the two things that were being that were cited, they're both legal medications and they were overages. However, just the reporting that Deodoro had three positives is instantly treated in the wider fallout as doping of horses, and they're drugging, and this guy is a cheat. Joe, nothing in this mechanism is going to change the perception out there that if somebody has a positive, an overage on legal meds, and it's treated like it's like it's the most heinous crime that's ever happened in the game's history. How is this thing going to stop that?
Well, I don't know that it will stop that, Steve. Right? It's easy for people to report the overages without
they didn't do
you know
that.
without actually having to do the hard work of explaining it as you just did. So that's one issue. I think, though, I'm hopeful, and look, you're a long way from home, but you're hopeful that if you have a more rational system, right, that people could eventually gain confidence in the system itself. Mm-hmm. That's really the hope, right? Like, there's always going to be complicated situations. It's never, sadly, like the image of medication issues is always kind of fairy tale-ish black and white instead of the complicated way it exists mm-hmm. in the real world. And that occurs in human athletes as well as equine athletes. Right, like it's extremely complicated. Some of this, you have a bit of science, you have body chemistry. There's all sorts of stuff going on.
Sure,
and but the idea, I don't think it's a bad one, is to have a more unified system and not one just focused on. I don't always give them the meat that they want on the bone, but. This is about much more than medication.
Agreed. And on that topic, in fact, I had our friend Melissa Nolan on Twitter actually asked a germane question. What is the potential for a mechanism like this to bring other standards into focus, including aftercare and sales practices and other elements, stewarding standards and rules on track?
Yeah, I take a very expansive view of what's going to be under the authority's purview. I'm sure the tracks and the sales companies and et cetera, might want to take a more restrictive view. But I take it as anything that affects the horse's safety and equine welfare should be included under this or potentially included. I think the Supreme Court decision was called McCullough versus Maryland. I never went to law school, but I seem to remember that from physics class, right? That the court gets to decide what it gets to decide on. And I think that's right. I think you've had several breeders. Let's give an example. Several breeders have been the most outspoken about medication policy and the need for a strong hand. Well, that's great. That should extend right down to the sales ground or right down to the horse's birth, right? We should definitely be looking at cosmetic surgeries. We should definitely be looking at bisphosphonate use and other medications given to young horses because, you know, the likelihood that that's affecting the horse's racing career is probably significant.
Joe, there was, it seemed, I'm going to ask Eric about this too, there seemed to be in some of the language the potential for a little wiggle room, and one of the encouraging parts on the Lasix discussion was what seemed to me, and this came in, not in Matt's reporting, but I think it was in, I think it might have been in Frank Angst's version, the discussion point of a waiver for some races, and what felt to me, what popped in my mind was a return to the era, the early Lasix use era of approvals, of gaining vet board approvals. Did you sense that that was an accurate, you know, potentiality that there was some give in the Lasix elements of this point?
I do, but that's one of the things that's kind of been a little bit of a moving target, Steve. So I think it's better to wait for the language and to interpret the language. I've heard various descriptions of it. You know, I think the intent is to not have wholesale changes for 3 years or so and to do a significant bunch of research. I think one of the nice things now, let's be honest, the research on Lasix over the last 10 to 20 years has been a little shoddy, to say the least. Or shoddy is not the right word, that would assume. But scant and less than...
scattershot.
Scattershot. Less than satisfying. How's that? So I think, look, we have the opportunity in major racing jurisdictions like New York and Kentucky over the next few years to actually do some real research with two-year-olds and stakes races. And I think that's it. You know, what veterinary scientist wouldn't want to take that opportunity, right? It seems like too good of an opportunity to pass up. I know in New York we're trying to get our plan together. I know Maryland, they've gone pretty quickly and done it. So, you know, that's the sort of evidence-based decision-making, and this is really an important point to me, right? All our decision-making should be evidence-based, right? It should be as scientific as possible. It should be built on independent research, not like my opinion or your opinion or anyone else's opinion. Right, our opinion should be informed by the evidence, not the evidence informed by the opinions. And sadly, in our sport, and it's kind of what makes the sport good, right? It's a sport of opinions. My horse is better than yours.
Yes.
I can pick horses better than you can pick horses, right? Like it's what makes the sport great, right? The competition, both on the track and at the wagering windows, but in terms of governance, it makes it very difficult because it's still a sport of opinions, and I got to hear everyone's opinion, but no one really brings any evidence. And I can actually give you a good example of this. Actually, it's a counterexample, but in the Northeast, in the Mid-Atlantic, we've been, Scott Palmer, the equine medical director in New York, has been using a lot of work done by Tim Parkin, who's an epidemiologist, okay? And we're making changes based on the evidence found by the epidemiologist. And we're making things safer and lowering the breakdown rate and improving the horse's welfare by using evidence. Sometimes it's evidence that I wouldn't have agreed with before, or it's evidence that's surprising. But I think that's really the only way to do it, and I'm hopeful if we have a strong central staff and good rulemaking committees that's the kind of decision making that this sort of authority will have, right? That it's evidence based, that it's all done for the best interest of the horse. It's not an opinion of, you know, this big owner or that big trainer or blah, blah, blah. It's really done based on an analytical approach. And that's the way all sports are going. That's the way our society's going, right? That's and it's about time we get on that train.
Joe Applebaum, everybody, J.A. Goods on Twitter, the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. And, Joe, I probably will end up talking to you again next week as the New York Breds are part of course, the Phasic sale. And the summer has really flown by despite the ambient conditions at Saratoga. And we, you know, we're going to power forward. And, of course, you as a breeder consigner operation and pinhooking operation, I'm anxious to hear next week your thoughts toward the sale.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I mean, the equine markets are crazy. We'd love to talk to you next week about it because I'm both hopeful as we have some nice horses selling there, but yet there's some trepidation, obviously, due to the, you know, economic insult that COVID-19 has dealt many, many people.
Well, you might, what people can visit off the hook to look at your consignment?
Actually, I don't sell yearlings myself. I sell them with two consigners, Paramount Sales and
okay.
Indian Creek, who are very good partners in this process. So.
Very nice. All right. So Indian Creek and Pat at Paramount. Excellent.
Yeah.
Joe Applebaum, everybody. And Joe with the perspective from the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, and as mentioned and noted by Alan Foreman, the legacy of Rick Violette, very much part of what transpired yesterday. Eric Hamelbeck is standing by, and Eric is going to join us to provide the national HBPA response. And as I mentioned, and I'll keep mentioning, there were two entities that were in their written statements and response to yesterday that cited the horse players. And that was Joe, who you just heard from, and Eric right now. Eric, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning. How are you? Everything good over at Churchill?
Well, the news this morning.
The news
with,
hurts, yeah.
Yeah, with Tommy Drury.
It's sick in my stomach over that after being at Ellis on Ellis Park Derby Day. And just, you know, what a great horse, what a great owner, what a great story with the trainer. I mean, just, it's a heartbreaking story that obviously we're all mourning over his loss, but the good thing is the horse will come back. I know, working with Touch Gold, he went through a pretty severe injury, very sounding very similar, and came back as strong as ever. So he'll be back. And who would have thought we'd have said a year ago, wait for the Preakness, and he'll get there. So let's see what happens.
Well, yesterday you responded with. I don't want to say that you were incredulous, but you were certainly taken aback by the way in which the presentation couched itself.
Right.
The inclusion of all the stakeholders, well, except for the horsemen. Right. You know, Alan.
Right.
Alan talked a little bit about, you know, some of the work that went into the dialogue, and of course the NTRA the NTRA has not been cited as you know, as much as they should be in moderating what had been a fairly unacceptable version of the HIA, as it were. But NTRA worked very hard. This was the thing that you and Alan and Alex Waldrop and Dennis Drazen have all spoken to in the last 18 months, the references to the alternate bill, which, you know, is very much seemingly the core, the foundation of what you know, what seems to be going forward. Give everybody the HBPA take on this and what's acceptable to you and what needs to be addressed further.
Thanks, Steve. And yes, definitely I appreciate you stating that the presentation was of concern. I want everybody to know, and hopefully they are very aware, the mission statement within the National HBPA very clearly states that we are for and support the development and adoption implementation and enforcement of nationwide uniform rules that promote safety and integrity in racing. And that, you know, I want to draw back on that word safety. We have continued to educate Hill congressmen on the Hill, senators on the Hill, that the reality is the bill that was being put forth for so many years, the most recent iterations starting in 2015, I certainly feel as if Congressman Andy Barr had all good intentions, but that bill was not the right bill. Some people can utilize the phrase, it didn't go far enough. You know, we've picked out very specific points of opposition, not points that we wanted to necessarily say, even the fact we're not supporting a federal bill. We never said that. We never said that we wouldn't support a federal bill. We said that what was being presented was not what's best for the business, and it's not what's best for the industry. And I think I did hear the end of Joe's piece. One of the things that that bill didn't do was base everything on evidence, base it on research. And it's clear now, and we thank Senator McConnell for stepping in, realizing that what had been put forth wasn't the proper thing for the industry. So now, what are we looking at? I would tell you that, again, the presentation was, I will use the word offensive, but ultimately the concern was that the presentation implied that everybody was at the table. And that's not true. I would be honest and say that, as I'm sure Alan Foreman's group in D.C. has done, we've constantly been in contact with Senator McConnell's office, and we've constantly told them that the previous Horse Racing Integrity Act didn't go far enough, or it certainly didn't address the safety issues. And it certainly gained a lot of momentum, I think, unfairly, so to speak, based off the tragedies in Santa Anita. And there's not one of us who's done this for a living that is even remotely okay with any fatality on a racetrack. But the reality is 99.85% of the races in the United States over the past 5 years happened without a fatality. So why are safety precautions not being taken at a certain racetrack when those fatalities occur in a state such as they did? So that was a big part of our messaging, not just to Senator McConnell's office, but, hey, if we're going to address something, let's look at the Los Angeles District Attorney's Office, who did an independent investigation and clearly found through the necropsies there were no medication violations. Not only were there no illegal substances, there were no substances found therapeutic above the proper threshold for racing. So it wasn't drugs. Okay, so when we went to Senator McConnell's office, when we understood that he was going to be putting something forward, we hoped to make an impression. We hoped to have a difference. We hoped to be invited to the discussion of the legislation that's being put forward. The number one thing on our list when we got staff in a room was track safety. We want a mandatory surface analysis, independent, something that didn't happen at Santa Anita. We want there to be a mandatory national injury database that is implemented that every track must adhere to. The second thing was laboratory accreditation. You know, I said on your show last week with Jerry, I'm going to continue to say that I believe the Department of Agriculture is the better entity, not the Federal Trade Commission. But the reality is our uniformity and lack thereof comes from our labs. You know, we can legitimately say that one of the positives that Mr. Baffert had at Oaklawn would not have been a positive if it was on the international world. And why? Because we're testing at a limit of detection, not at a screening limit. The third thing that we really addressed, typically what people have called the USADA role, it's that medication control board. We were adamant, and I think Alan's group was as well. I know Alan's group was as well. USADA was not, in our opinion, the entity to be, quote-unquote, put in charge. And I say that because it's an assumption. When you have seven people on a board of 13, you're going to be in charge. Now, does that mean we're afraid of independent oversight? Absolutely not. What Racing Commission isn't independent. I mean, they're appointed by state government. Do they know racing inside and out? Most commissioners, I would say, they don't. So we're not afraid of an independent oversight. But with the Horse Racing Integrity Act as it did stand, those members were in there, as far as I could tell, for life. There certainly wasn't any verbiage that would remove anyone. So that's a fear. You know, that was a concern. So having what we now hear being presented as the new Authority Act has a lot more palatability than anything we've been opposing to this point. So I'm encouraged that somebody's listening. The fourth point that we addressed was Lasix, and I know none of us in this industry want to keep talking about Lasix. But at the end of the day, I think any decision to remove Lasix is not based around science. And in my opinion, the removal of Lasix is going to have a severely negative effect on the business, and people don't understand it. It's the reason why, since 2015, when I sat down with, before I was even in this position, Steve, I sat down with Congressman Barr's office and said, how about looking at an economic study that's going to tell us, A, what is this going to cost us, and B, what's it going to do to our industry? Never. Not once have we ever been given such a document or even been implied that we would get it. And fast forward to now, what's the biggest concern of the current proposed legislation? I think Matt Haggerty asked it at the meeting yesterday, where's the funding sources coming from? Mm-hmm. It's a concern. You know, I mean, I think it's a valid concern. I'm not saying that we can't pay for it. But again, as I've tried to at least beat the drum of and stand on the soapbox for, if we're going to do this, we all need to have a role in helping pay for the integrity. And if it's our anti-doping program that's going to cost the most money, then we all in the industry need to be playing a role in funding that. It's the reason why I developed the white paper for a checkoff system. I mean, you don't have to look very far to all the livestock councils. They have checkoff systems that enable every entity to help fund their programs. Now, their checkoff systems are essentially created for marketing, which was a white paper of mine many years ago. But if we're going to need to find funding, let's look at a checkoff system and develop a portion from everybody in the industry. So I guess before I throw it back to you, we're encouraged that people are listening. We're definitely encouraged that the Horse Racing Integrity Act that has been pushed doesn't look like it's going to move forward. But most importantly, we don't have the piece of legislation yet. It's not an easy thing to do. Again, we certainly applaud Senator McConnell for recognizing that, and we're going to have to wait to see what exactly is in the legislation to see how our members and essentially my board looks at the possibility of support or opposition. But I would like to make, going back to the very beginning, that presentation that everybody's at the table, that's not true. And if you look at the Interstate Horse Racing Act, there were two entities that were not present on that stage. There was no Racing Commission presence, and there was no Horseman's Representative presence. So that part was concerning to us, and certainly we want to make sure that, we're at the table. In many cases, I have forced our way to the table, at least by trying to get our message in front of those who are making decisions. And that's what I'll continue to do if I have to. But they need to listen to horsemen. They need to understand the business, and that's my connection to the horse players, because this business doesn't exist without horse players, period. Mm. My notes from John Nehrud, from our conversations before he passed away, there are two people, two entities in this industry that matter, owners and horse players, period. Everybody else is ancillary. Everybody else is here to exist because they put their money forward. You got to take that into consideration.
Eric, outstanding. I appreciate it, and I'll reiterate. You know, just you and Joe, the ones that
absolutely,
you know, that acknowledge the horse players in this, and you know they were. I understand referencing, you know, the benefits to the longevity of the sport by providing a better, more efficient mechanism for management.
Right.
But if the fact that nobody in those roles that had opportunities to speak, when they were writing up the press releases, that it didn't occur to anyone to say that this will benefit horse players and this will improve the landscape and the confidence in the game for horse players. It just tells you that they're not even thinking about the core business. And that's just, I mean, it's just exasperating. I mean, to a point, you know, I defend as much as anybody, you know, every entity and every organ in the game. But when we insult the major entity over and over again that pays the freight and fills up the coffers for the purses,
right.
it just gets to be just tiresome. There's no other word for it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And again, I think that, you know, there are many people, and I think both Jerry and I commented on this before, there are many that consider this a game, or they consider it the sport of kings. And, you know, again, I love your references, steeplechase. My reference is from being a polo player, that many who just want to compete for a silver piece or silver trophy don't take in the business side of it. I don't sit here today, and I certainly don't have a 30-plus year career without the business side of it. I'm not a wealthy person. I'm a hardworking individual. I love this industry because I love the horse, and I've been in it because of my love for the horse. And this industry is driven, there's no other way to say it, this industry is driven by the compassion of owners who put their money where their mouth is to compete with their horses, and then the fact that our industry is wager-driven and it's only existing because of the horse players. Whether you're a professional, quote-unquote, or whether you're casual, or whether you're me sitting here putting $2 across on a ghost zapper that I raised. You know, that's what this industry is driven on, and people don't understand it, or they understand it so much to the point that they want their sport of kings back. This is not an elitist industry. This is an industry.
Eric, well done. Well done to everybody this morning. Matt for reporting, and
thank you, Steve.
You and Joe Applebaum and Alan Foreman that are, you know, looking out for the, you know, the entities that put on the show, and that comes from the horsemen and the owners and the players.
Thank you for getting out there.
Buddy. No, I appreciate it. We'll keep tabs, and we'll see where this ends up.
Sounds good.
Eric Hamelbeck, everybody. Eric the Tiger, and GEAUX. Go Tigers! And I appreciate Eric. Eric has really, you know, he kind of grew into this job, I'll tell you, and he you know, he learned very quickly a whole bunch of aspects, you know, beside the core, you know, part that the HBPA business model and the HBPA role that it enjoys. Got some more breaking news, because the breaking news doesn't seem to abate. We were down to 17 horses. Now we're back up to 18. Yes, we've lost Art Collector, but we've gained South Bend. South Bend has informed Ben Huffman's office that he will compete. And, of course, if we go back to that conversation, what, 5 weeks ago maybe, 4 weeks ago, that we had with Stanley Huff. And Stanley, you know, we were going over that horse of racing age sale and was asking the, you know, where some of the Sagamore horses were ending up. And South Bend had been one that changed hands. And so Bill Mott will have a starter. He lost a Modernist earlier this summer as a Derby hopeful, but now we'll have South Bend. So Mott will get a chance to defend as the Derby winning trainer in 2020. And speaking, by the way, of Derby 2019, the legal proceedings came to a final end, a finite end. Today's what, Tuesday? So did it come out on Sunday, I think? The news officially that there will be no further legal avenues sought by the Wests, and so that is done with, just in time for Derby 146, and we're about 15 minutes away from the draw for Derby 146, and we'll listen in as we did yesterday, and then Gary Young will join us after the draw, and we'll talk to Gary about the horses from the West Coast that are going to be involved this weekend, plus some of the ones that he bought, specifically that Princess Noor, and so we'll catch up with Gary Young in hour three today. Right now, standing by, Bill Downs, and Bill joins us at Indiana tomorrow. Four stakes, two Indiana bred, and a couple of sales stakes as well. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, I was just thinking about the morning line. Not too difficult. It wasn't going to be difficult to begin with, but it made it even more easy without Art Collector and all that. Tis the Law, probably it's got to be 4-5 or even money. It's got to be one of those two. Just a matter of what, I guess, Battaglia decides. But, you know, and for me, it's 4-5 unless he draws the one post.
Well, and even frankly, yeah. I mean, it just doesn't seem, and I explained to yesterday, when it comes to an 18-horse field, I can tell you that they will leave the one berth empty and the 20 berth empty. So they'll center the 18 horses in the new 20-horse gate. So there'll be a little bit more room for the one horse, whoever that might be, with the gate, with the, you know, the new gate and the way it's positioned. So that... I'm not sure anything's going to stop him at this point, Bill. We're going to go forward, and there's plenty of intrigue anyway.
Yes, there is. You know, still betting wise, there's ways to other avenues to go besides you know, winner. Exact type thing. You know, find a way to get that third and one shot and into the exotics, and
that's
still
it.
Ways
exactly.
to make some money. So
exactly, it's an 18 horse field, and even if you acquiesce to the likelihood of Tis the Law, there's plenty of options when it comes to that. Plus the multis, it's going to be a tremendous card based on certainly on what we saw already for Friday. You've got a tremendous card tomorrow, and I want to focus in on it. And I should mention also, Bill, yesterday a very mundane series of winners, and yet the Pick Five managed to pay $750 again.
Yeah, just, you know, even with the chalk, you can sometimes... put together some very logical horses together in the sequence, and lo and behold, pick five pays $750. Just looking at it once again, we had that 6-1 shot. Then we had a favorite, two favorites, three favorites, and then why Paul won. Now I make the morning line and all that, and there was a couple scratches in the race, but I am still miffed. I do not know how why Paul Y went off at 7-2 in the race. I know it's just a 5-horse field, and I, overestimated pain is my gain in the morning line, but. That one really did confuse me. Still, for me, unless I was hitting the all button in that race, I was still going to be. I needed some help there with why Paul Y. But somebody liked him because he went off the third choice in the race. But I'm still trying to figure that one out.
Well, the card today, a quick reference to today's card, it's a very nice sequence, again, with overflow fields, and the pick five will start in race five, 8 by 11 by 9 by 11 by 12, but it's tomorrow's card I wanted to talk about because you've got four stakes, and on either end as well, at the end of the sequence, there is a 10 claimer non-2, and there's also a maiden special weight that starts the... sort of the mid-card portion. It's not part of the pick five, but there's a nice group of horses, and Cherie DeVoe is 5-1 with Manetta, a Kozan filly, and this one is working nicely over at the Spectrum, and Manetta, Cherie has done good work with firsters. I thought Manetta could be very live tomorrow.
Yeah, that one, certainly. And then John Ortiz's filly, Violence filly, Novel Squall, I guess, has been trading very forwardly at Indiana Grand from the gates. And, Violence horses do very well first time out. So that was another one that I thought that piqued my interest.
Let's get to the pick five sequence. You've got the two sales stakes that start the fifth and the sixth. 1 mile, we've got three-year-old fillies first, then the colts and geldings. Some thoughts about the opening pair?
Yeah, I don't really have a big opinion in that the filly race, the auction race. I made Sentimental Journey the favorite, but kind of by default, there's, the most wins in the field is just two with Sentimental Journey and Betch, and Betch is coming off of a disappointing effort and really doesn't have any two-turn form to look at. Sentimental Journey at least got around the racetrack going around the ground last time out. All right, chased Bloody Mary Morton from the Randy Matthews barn, who went to the lead in that race. They went 1-2 around that track. It's just one of those races, just trying to find anybody that's going to like going a route of ground. Maybe Mystical Justice, just because she's slightly getting better with each and every race. Brewski finally put it all together last time out. Elusive Justice will be running on late. So it's just one of those races that, for me, I don't have the strongest opinion in the world, and sometimes that's okay.
Well, Carmella Key coming off the maiden breaker, but is going to have to stretch out. So you got that equation to deal with for Dr. Gorham. You mentioned Mystical Justice. There's also Elusive Justice, who it's notable that Gary Patrick reaches for Deshaun Parker, 8-1, and has run a series of okay races looking for an allowance win. And maybe Deshaun, I'm certainly not taking a shot at the bug, the 7-pound bug, but Deshaun Parker is Deshaun Parker. Let's look at the boys' race, and this group features a number of horses actually that we've been seeing throughout the meet. It's really pretty amazing. In fact, Expressed, who's a 20-1 shot for Michael Lauer, making the sixth start of the meet. Cash Logistics, though, for Genevieve Londano, coming out of the good try in the snack at a nice price. You've also got the likes of Unbridled Beast in here for Randy Matthews. Maybe we can tiptoe through here with just a couple of multiples.
Yeah, Cash Logistics would be my pick in here. Unbridled Beast showed a lot more early speed in that route race on July 30th, his route debut, and passed that test with flying colors. But Nate's Heartthrob's got some early speed as well, so it's not going to be like it's an easy pace. And then you got Maters and Tater, too, as a sprinter who's going to have the lead. So for this race, I'd like to come from a little bit off the pace, and Cash Logistics has that running style more so than Unbridled Beast, and that would probably be the one that I lean towards in that sixth race.
The 7th and 8th, we go to a couple of familiar Indiana-bred stakes from the season. The William Henry Harrison, Tippecanoe, and Tyler Two. And if you ever go driving through Indiana, you can visit the Harrison Homestead and the Tippecanoe Monument and the Shelby County. Let's look at this pair.
Well, Operation Stevie, I made as a 7-5 favorite, showed that he still got his A game at the age of 8 when he came from off the pace and winning a nice allowance race at Indiana Grand on July 23rd. You know, last year, Operation Stevie finished third in this race behind Double Tough. Now, Double Tough, I made the strong second choice in 9-5, and if he had a race under his belt, I'd probably make him the favorite. But he's making his first start of the year. He got claimed at the end of last year for $25,000, and now Kim Hammond is the trainer of Double Tough, and training up into the race without a race under his belt and the rail, I thought that was enough that I made Operation Stevie the favorite. A couple horses to use, the third and fourth choices. Here comes Doc, who ran second the Double Tough last time out, faced up against Open Company and allowance option claiming race on Slop. He's not really known as a slop horse, still finished a pretty good third. And that's what I thought, just toyed with the competition on August the 4th. Might have the most speed in the race. I mean, Double Tough was never a horse that wanted to be on the front end. And look at the race. There's not a ton of speed in the race. Here comes Doc, I guess, maybe. But that's what I thought was going to be the one to catch in here. And, that number was pretty big they got for the race level on August the 4th. I know he's just won two races and going up against some old war horses, if you will, like Operation Stevie and Here Comes Doc. But I thought that's what I thought was worth a look, potentially stealing it on the front end.
Yeah, I agree. And, this is the equation. I mean, do you look to a horse that might kind of water bug out there, or a turn back like Operation Stevie, getting back to sprinting off of the mile and 70 effort? And he's kind of interchangeable, it seems, these days, stretching out, and that move was very clever by Contreras, and it got him a win. And he had actually gone a fairly long stretch. It had been back to last October that he saw the winner's circle. That was in the Gus Grissom, and so maybe that that win kind of gets him back on his toes. He is 8 years old, not a youngster, but
no.
I agree. That's what I thought might just kind of run him off their feet. He runs back to that allowance win. He's very tough in here.
Yeah, he might be. I try to wait to make my best bets and all that the day of, and then I release him on the wire to wire show on our signal. But he's in the running. I might make him my best bet tomorrow. He's got a interesting, I think, tactical advantage over some of these other horses in that race, and should be a prize, I would think.
How about the Shelby County? Goes as the fourth leg of the pick five.
Well, I don't know if we're going to have any price in this one. I mean, Unbridled Class, I made 1-5. I don't do that very often. I do that about three times a year. We had one yesterday with Foster Frippery, but
opener.
How do you go against Unbridled Class?
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a nice draw on the outside. There's not. I mean, who's the other speed in the race? First Lady Maggie and Indiana Knight, and she's much better than both of those. She doesn't have to have the lead either, so she'll be right on the outside, clear of traffic. And Fireball Baby, I made co-second choice in the race. She's better going around a ground than she is sprinting. Expect Indy ran such a clunker last time out, even though her races last year, obviously she would be a strong second choice.
That was a long layoff.
Yeah, long layoff. And yeah, but show me a little bit. That's all. I don't have to, you know, she doesn't have to win. She doesn't have to finish second. She doesn't have to finish third. Just show me something. Not six beaten 13 lengths. And I always thought to expect Indy, you know, she is the defending champion in the race. And, you know, I'll give her that. But, you know, where she was last year going into this race and where she is this year is completely different in my humble opinion. So, you know, expect India, I guess, will come down a little bit from that. But to me, it's all unbridled class. I'm not, I try and beat the favorite plenty and plenty of times. But this time, I'm going to swallow my be a chalk eating weasel.
All right. That's all right. And although I will say that because it is Gumster Stable, our friend Andy Berg, I probably will use Expect Indy at least as a C at the least, maybe as a B. And then finally, before we go to the Derby draw, the nightcap, or the at least the nightcap for the pick five, there is a maiden 330-yard quarter horse race. But what are we doing in the nightcap?
Well, the nightcap, you know, 10 claimers going a mile. I think there's some speed in the race. You got Tricky Tune and Classical Magic, and they're two of the horses I made the favorites in the morning line. And so if that's the case, maybe the inside horse, the Sequoia for Ian Wilkes, who was a recent maiden winner at Ellis Park, chasing a very fast early pace on August the 14th, but seems to be coming into form. And might be the one that gets a pretty good trip in here. That would probably be my top choice. And they're trying to beat Classical Magic and Tricky Tune, who are both horses with plenty of early speed.
I like it. And I would take a look as well at More Cowbell. Might be a little, at 10 to 1, too. You're going to get a little bit of a value, a third off the layoff. And Scooter Hughes takes off the blinkers. And I think I might want to, coming over from Belterra, More Cowbell. Yeah, I think so.
Sounds good.
I think I'm using. Just about ready for the draw. And, Bill, you got the best of everything. Thursday is the last day of the race week, and then you can enjoy Friday and Saturday.
How about that?
Not so bad. Some really good racing today, tomorrow, Thursday, the Indiana season, which has just been, frankly, magical. Just tremendous racing Mondays through Thursday. And follow Bill. Bill Downs won. He's been handing best bets out like M&Ms. Well done, Bill.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. And, we're just at the halfway point of the meet right now.
Yeah, we're gonna keep digging in, and especially during some couple of moments between some of the big ovals are taking some time, California, New York. So the Indiana has really been a nice addition to the summer, and I thank you for the visit.
Sounds good, Steve. Look forward to talking to you in a couple of weeks.
You got it, Bill Downs. Everybody, I think we're gonna actually stay here, Casey. Right? We better stay. They're gonna start this. In fact. There's Bucky right now on the screen. Let's pick up Travis Stone over in the Aristides Lounge.